Hi, and welcome to this audio edition of Polygamy, What Love Is This? With host Doris Hansen. On this program, we discuss polygamy and Mormon fundamentalism from a biblical Christian perspective. We talk about the history of polygamy, its modern-day fruit, share stories from people who have escaped polygamy, and talk about current events related to polygamy. You can learn more about the video edition of this program at whatloveisthis.tv. And now, here's Doris.
Welcome again to Polygamy, What Love Is This? Hi, I'm your host, Doris Hansen, and we talk about polygamy here. We have a purpose for this program, and our main purpose is to tell people and let polygamists know that polygamy is not part of God's salvation plan, as you've been told. I know I was born and raised in a polygamy group, and I know what they teach from the cradle. The only thing that I thought pleased God is if I practiced polygamy when I got older. There's no evidence in the Bible whatsoever that God has ever required polygamy for salvation, and we're here to talk about that every week. I suggest that those who have any questions about polygamy to get into the Bible yourself and read it for yourself and check out the passages and see exactly what it says for yourself. Don't take someone's word for it. You study it. And don't read between the lines either, because you'll read something that's not there if you do that. God said what He meant, and He meant what He said, so you don't have to guess about it. You won't find anywhere in the Bible, and every week I ask someone to send in a passage or proof that God has required salvation, that it's part of His salvation plan from the Scriptures, and so far no one has come up to the challenge because it just plain isn't there. This is a live broadcast from Salt Lake City, Utah, and we are a telephone call-in program, and about halfway through the show, we will open up the telephone lines for you to call in and ask your questions and make your remarks and comments regarding polygamy. Our telephone numbers are 801-973-8820. That's 973-TV-20. And remember, if anyone is watching and you're in a polygamy group and you would like to participate in the call-in part of the program, but you're afraid you're going to be recognized, just remember all you have to do is call in either with an alias or tell the operator that you would like to remain anonymous, and the operator will take care of it from that point. Our contact information, the webpage for the Polygamy Ministry is shieldandrefuge.org. You can go on the webpage and you can find out more about polygamy. If you're not in a polygamy group, and if you are in a polygamy group, you can find information about polygamy, what the Bible says about it. Is it God's really His salvation plan? You can read stories of people who have left. And there's a contact page where you could contact someone if you have something that you want to talk about confidentially. You will find on the webpage that a safe exit is provided for anyone who wants to leave a polygamous situation. And also, if you or if someone you know is being abused in a polygamy group, you can contact someone off the webpage, or you can call the toll-free number, which is 877-425-9993. That's a toll-free number for you to call if you or someone you know is being abused. You can also call the child abuse hotline if a child is involved, and that is toll-free 800-678-9399. And if it is domestic abuse, you can call 800-897-5465. Or if it's an immediate emergency, don't forget, you can always call 911. And don't be afraid, if you're in a polygamy group and you're being abused, don't be afraid to ask for help, because you need help. Being abused is illegal. A webpage for the program is aboutpolygamy.com. You can go there and find future programming listed, as well as previous programs on streaming video. And the email address is tv@aboutpolygamy.com. We would love to have comments that you may have about the program. And if you have any particular topic that you would like us to cover in the future, we'd ask you and request that you send it in to us so that we can meet whatever need that you may have. Our calendar update next Monday evening is our discussion group. We have one every month, the third Monday of each month, from 6:30 p.m. until 8 o'clock. And if you or someone that you know is interested in attending the discussion group, email us tv@aboutpolygamy.com. We'll give you the details of how you can attend. We are having some good results with this. We enjoy it. It's low key. If you've been in a polygamy group and you still have issues you're dealing with, this group would be for you. And if you, even if you're still in a group and you just have questions, just somebody to talk to, you're welcome to come and participate in the discussion group. Also, I would like to report on the TV20 open house, Christmas open house that they hosted last Friday evening here at the studios. It was absolutely awesome. It was the first time, of course, that we've been to the open house here, and we weren't quite sure what to expect, but it certainly was a nice time where people came. They took time out of their own days, their own evenings, to come up here and to present themselves, introduce themselves, and thank us. And it was so encouraging. And I just want to thank each one of you who came and encouraged us, because it was very encouraging. And I was amazed at how many people came. Some of our volunteers for the show were also here, and they also expressed amazement and joy that you are appreciating and enjoying the program. And I'd also like to say right now that we do have volunteers that help put this show together. And without all of the volunteers working, there's no way that we could put on this show. And I'd like to thank you for the encouragement that you have given them as well by coming last Friday night. And I'd like to thank every one of the volunteers that show up every week and give of their time. Some of them travel a lot of miles to come and help out. And we couldn't do this without everybody cooperating and participating. So thank you very much. Last week we had a caller who called in, and she had mentioned that she had been studying, and she'd been studying material that was not church approved, and her family started turning their back on her, and she had called in and talked about that. And I didn't quite get exactly what she was trying to say, and I missed it just a little bit. So I called her after the show last week, and I talked with her. Very, very sweet lady. She has been in the LDS Church for many, many years. She has a family. And she started reading some material because she had questions. And when her family discovered that she was reading material that was not church approved, they turned their back on her. She called in and she wanted me to mention on the program from time to time that even if your family turns your back on you, to don't pay any attention to it, finding out the truth is the most important thing. And so I told her that I would indeed mention it, and that I would from time to time mention this to our viewers, because that is very important. You know, when somebody is obeying God's command and their family turns on them, that can be a pretty difficult thing. But we need to obey God first. And you know what? In 2 Timothy 2:15, God tells us we are supposed to study to show ourselves approved. 1 Thessalonians 5:21 says we are supposed to test everything and hold on to that which is good. Acts 17:11 says we are supposed to search the scriptures every day to see if what we're being taught is true. 2 Corinthians 13 verse 5 says, test yourselves to make sure that you're in the faith. God tells us over and over again to test everything, to study. And then when we obey His command, our family turns on us. Isn't that something? It doesn't seem like love, the true love that God and Jesus Christ has commanded, is evident in a religion that would have your family turn on you just because you're studying something that is not church approved or group approved. And so where's the free agency? Okay, several weeks ago, a caller called in and she asked if I was aware of any statistics of the penalty for statutory rape in the 1800s. And I admitted I didn't have a clue what it was, but that I would see if I could find out some information, and if I could, I would report back. And so I did find a little information out. I didn't go into a very deep look for this, research for it, and so I will just report what I do have here, and it is a little bit interesting here. In early American history, from 1637 to 1647, the capital laws in New England prescribed the death penalty for rape and statutory rape. By 1776, most of the colonies considered rape a capital crime, and hanging was the usual mode of punishment for the rape. And as the years went by and states were added to the Union, different penalties were added to each state and for their crimes, the different penalties became evident in the different states. The penalty in some of the states was 5 to 20 years, and Missouri had a minimum of 5 years in prison. North and South Carolina had the death penalty for rape. Alabama had life in prison. Georgia, 6 months solitary confinement or hard labor for 10 to 20 years. It's pretty tough for statutory rape. Kentucky, death if the victim was under 12, and prison if the victim was over 12 years old. By 1897, there were only 3 federal capital offenses, and they were murder, treason, and rape. By 1925, capital punishment was authorized for rapists in much of the United States. Alabama allowed for capital punishment for statutory rape, and South Carolina and Virginia permitted executions for attempted rape. In all, between the years of 1800 and 1964, a total of 1,004 men were executed in 25 states for the crimes of rape and attempted rape. I looked for some statistics for Utah, for the land of Deseret, for the Intermountain West, and I couldn't find anything on it. And I don't know if any of our viewers would have this statistics for Utah, but it would be interesting to look at. I know in some of the early Mormon history that I'm reading on polygamy, I have discovered that once Brigham Young got out here and they announced publicly that they were practicing polygamy, it just absolutely raged, and people were, in fact, one of the articles I read said that you couldn't find a girl to marry because they would all been taken up, even the young girls. And so I can't see that statutory rape would be much of an issue in Utah if they were marrying these girls and starting families that young. But it would be interesting if any of you do have information on that for this area. You might want to share it to me. You could send it to tv@aboutpolygamy.com, and we could take it from there. Also, one of the subjects that has come up several times in the past few shows and with the guests and even phone calls and private conversations is the Lost Boys. And I thought I would talk a little bit about them tonight as well before we get into the Bible study on polygamy. For the viewers who are not familiar maybe with the Lost Boys story, I'll briefly go over what that is about, and then I'll go into what I need to talk about with the Lost Boys. About the year 2004, around that period of time, Warren Jeffs, it was before he was arrested and put in prison, he was still out he was in charge of the Colorado City Group and Hilldale, Utah group of the FLDS there on the border of Arizona and Utah. And he just made up his mind one day and told the parents of hundreds of young boys that they needed to get rid of their young boys and take them out of the community and inform them that they weren't welcome to come back. Now, Warren Jeffs did this for a couple of reasons. One of the reasons was to test the obedience of his people. He wanted to see how far he could go before somebody rebelled or talked against him. And you know what? Nobody said a word. They did what he told him to do. Not one person talked back to Warren Jeffs or told him that that wasn't the right thing to do. Hundreds of boys between the ages of 13 and 18 years old were taken out of the community. They were put in their cars or their trucks or however they did it, but they just got them right out of their community. They dropped them off on highways, byways, under underpasses. They took them to the local communities, which at that time was the St. George and the local areas around there, and they just dropped them off on street corners. And they told them that they were not welcome back into the community or into their homes. These boys, like I said, were 13 to 18 years old. They had no money, no job, no car, no food, no extra clothes, no place to live, no place to sleep. They were abandoned, just plain abandoned. Now, what do you think that's going to do to these young boys in their heart? What kind of pain, emotional pain, do you think that they went through, knowing that the only people they loved and knew had rejected them the way they had by just letting them off? You know, these boys also, most of them, or at least a lot of them, didn't have anything above a third grade education. And most of them also had absolutely no work experience, except for maybe some construction with their families. And so these lost boys became quite a problem for the city of St. George and for the area around, and actually they've trickled out into different areas in the Intermountain West as well. And they are a hurting group of boys, a hurting group of people. Some parents were asked, why did you do that? What do you think about your children? And some of the parents have said, they're dead to us. Warren Jeffs told us that we had to let them go, and so to us, they're dead. One young boy wanted to give his mother, tried to contact his mother to give her a Mother's Day present. She would ignore him. She said, he's dead. How do you think that makes him feel? You know, we have got a problem, and it's a problem that needs to be dealt with. And that's one thing the Ministry of Shielded Refuge wants to do, is really deal with this problem. You know, the arithmetic, as I've mentioned before, the arithmetic and polygamy groups just do not cooperate. You're always going to have an excess amount of boys in a polygamy group, and there's never going to be enough girls. When Warren Jeffs did this, I said one reason that he did it was to see the obedience and the loyalty of the parents of these boys. Another reason that he did it was because there was too many boys. And when the young boys grow up and the young girls grow up, they're going to obviously be attracted to each other. But when you're a young girl born in a polygamy group, your destiny is to become a plural wife. And so these young boys were drawing the attention of the girls, and they had to get rid of them, or there was going to be some problems. And so that's another reason that Warren Jeffs did this. Now, this was a pretty bold move on Warren Jeffs' part, and this normally is not the way that polygamy groups, most polygamy groups, do not handle their excess boys this way. In fact, FLDS hasn't done it this way either. Now, there are times when maybe a few boys will be asked to leave the group, but never on a mass scale like the Lost Boys were done. One of the ways that the polygamy groups will handle the excess boys is they just don't get married, or they'll leave the group and just go off and find a life of their own. And one way also is recruiting. And this is something that I also want to mention tonight, is the recruiting techniques. a young boy who is determined to stay in the polygamy group will go outside the group, and he will find a young girl to date, and they'll start dating. And it's very deceitful how they do this, some of them. Each one is different, but basically they do it the same way. They'll fall in love with the girl, or the girl will fall in love with him. Maybe he won't tell her that he's from a polygamy group. Maybe he will, but he'll promise, I'll never live polygamy. They'll fall in love, perhaps get married, and then she will be brought into the group, because if a man marries a girl on the outside, he can bring her in. But if a girl marries a man on the outside, she's automatically expelled. That's the way they work. Now, the girl, how does he recruit a girl into a polygamy group? One thing that is very clear is it's very easy to recruit a young Mormon girl into a polygamy group, because it's very easy for him to open up the Mormon scriptures and prove to her that polygamy and Mormonism are the same thing, are compatible. And so it's easy to teach a young girl, a young Mormon girl, that polygamy is from Joseph Smith. However, some of these girls are young, innocent girls that really don't know any better. They fall in love with this boy, and they'll get married, and they'll start a family, and then all of a sudden, her husband is going to take another wife. Well, he promised not to, but you know what? A promise that you make that it's against God's will in these groups doesn't matter. And then all of a sudden, she has to share the love of her husband, and she has a heartbreak. Maybe she's got a child or two, but at any rate, she's trapped. And now she has to suffer the heartbreak of sharing her husband. It's a very sad set of circumstances. It's very ungodly the way they do it. It's very deceitful the way some of them do it. If you or someone that you know is in a situation like this, again, you can go to the Shield and Refuge website, contact somebody off the contact page, and even if you just want to talk to somebody, I'm sure that there will be some help for you. Now, I was talking about this to somebody last week, and that person says, what do you mean by being trapped? Do they lock them up? No, and I thought I would bring that up. What does it mean to be trapped in a polygamy group? And normally it doesn't mean to be locked up. However, that has happened too. But the word trapped means maybe the girl hasn't had education, and she's got a family, and she wants to leave. How is she going to get out? How is she going to go? Maybe she'll have to leave her kids behind, and she doesn't want to do that. Maybe she realizes that if she gets out and takes her kids, she can't afford to rent an apartment. She can't afford to get a babysitter because she won't be able to get a good enough job that will pay these expenses. She's trapped. Maybe she loves her husband, and she doesn't want to lose him, even though she's lost him to another polygamous wife. But at any rate, the trapping is definitely there. But the worst trap of all is up here. The worst trap is the emotional, mind control, brainwashing, and fear that they instill in people, and the fear that if you leave, you are committing the unpardonable sin and you are headed right straight for hell. And so that is the trapping that I'm talking about. This is a rundown a little bit on what the Lost Boys are. There are hundreds of them out there. Some of them have gotten in legal trouble. Some of them have made it. There's been people who have reached out to them. But there's more work that needs to be done in this area. And this is something that is heavy on our hearts. Okay, last week I mentioned that we were going to start a study on polygamy in the Bible. And it's going to be based on this book. It's a Bible study on polygamy. And we're not going to follow this book exactly. We're not going to follow it word for word or page for page, but we are going to follow it section by section, looking at the polygamists in the Bible and answer, hopefully, your questions of, well, if these godly men in the Bible practice polygamy, how come you say that it's not God's will? So we're going to take a look at it and maybe help you see how I came up with the answers that I came up with. We read about in the Bible about biblical figures and even through history of people who have practiced polygamy through history, and we wonder, is this the right thing to do? I was born and raised, as I mentioned, in the Kingston Polygamy Group. It's a Mormon fundamentalist group, and it's called Mormon fundamentalists because they practice the fundamentalism of Mormonism. Back in when Mormonism was first invented by Joseph Smith, he claimed that he had a revelation from God that polygamy was supposed to be reinstituted. And as Abraham and David and Solomon of old, they were to begin living polygamy again. He called it an abomination in the Book of Mormon, but he called it righteous when he had the revelation in section 132 of the Doctrine and Covenants. Because the polygamy groups then and now continue to use the Bible as the basis and the reasoning for practicing polygamy, we are going to use the Bible to show where they are wrong, where this just isn't so. I often read news articles and hear news articles about polygamy, wondering if it should be made legal and if it was okay in the culture of Bible times. It certainly must be okay with God and so on. And they haven't done their studies either. They just copying what somebody else has said. So we're going to look in the Bible and see exactly what that's all about. I began to question polygamy as I was growing up. I couldn't believe it. It just didn't sit right with me that polygamy was right. One man having several wives. Why? I asked my mother, why couldn't I have several husbands? And she kind of coughed around, hadn't told me the birds and the bees yet. But so she just said, well, that just doesn't work when you're having kids. Well, you know what? It didn't sit right. And as I grew older, I got out of there right after I turned 18 before they could marry me off. And it was several years before I could do my own study to find out if what they said was true in the Bible. Because most polygamy groups call polygamy part of the plan of salvation, we're going to take a look at that. It's important that you find out what the Bible says. We've talked about this all the time, because that's where your salvation, by the way, is found. So we're going to use the Bible. We do not use the Mormon scriptures. It'll be very easy for you to go in the Mormon scriptures and find where you can live polygamy. But that's not where we're going. The Bible came first, and the Bible has preeminence. And there's been nobody yet that's ever been able to prove, as alleged, that you can't trust the Bible and that it's only man's words and not God's words and that it's been mistranslated. We will use the Bible because it is the preeminent word of God. So what does the Bible really say about polygamy? Does it condemn it or condone it? Is it something that God has required or is it an abomination to him? Our purpose is to examine these questions in depth and help you see how I came up with the answers. If polygamy is really part of God's salvation plan, we all need to know it, and we all need to live it. If polygamy is not part of God's salvation plan, we all need to know that, and believe it, and reject it, and embrace God's true salvation plan. And that's what we're trying to find out in this study. If polygamy was ever part of God's salvation plan, it is still part of his salvation plan because God doesn't change and his salvation plan has never undergone a change. Now, I've heard polygamists make remarks like this, quote, polygamy isn't for everybody, or it's only for those who can live it righteously. Or, living polygamy will damn more people than it will save. And now, you know, you take a look at these phrases, and if you consider them carefully, you will have to come to the conclusion that they just can't be true. They just don't make any sense at all. You see, God does not have a different salvation plan for me than he does for you. He doesn't have a different salvation plan for the early Mormon polygamists than he does for the present-day Mormons. He doesn't have a different salvation plan for the people in Abraham and David's day than he does for today. God hasn't changed. His salvation plan remains the same through the ages. And so we all must come to him exactly the same way. So let's find out what God's salvation plan is and does it include polygamy. We're going to open up the phone lines in a few minutes, so you might want to jot down the phone number, 801-973-8820. We're going to begin the study tonight in the beginning of the Bible, the first marriage. We're going to take a look at what God did at the beginning, and we're going to apply that as we begin the polygamy study. When God created mankind, we all know the story, he created Adam first, and then he created Eve. He created one man, and he created one woman. In Genesis chapter 2, verse 24, the Bible says in Genesis, therefore shall a man leave his father and his mother, and they shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh. One flesh. The two will become one. Now, right there, if you understood the Bible and if you knew what the Bible means and that God says what he means and all of that, the question would be over right here. Because God made two to be one. Now, I know there's a lot of arguments. I've heard a lot of them. I'm sure I haven't heard them all yet, but I've heard a lot of them. And one of the arguments is, well, when a man has three wives, these two are one, and then the second wife and him are one, and then the third wife and he are one. And so the two are one. Well, that's not right, because the three, he's fragmented. He's divided up. God wanted one for one. That is the way he shows it. That's the way he talks about it. And if you don't believe me, let's go forward a few thousand years. And let's go to Matthew chapter 19, verses 4 through 6, and see what Jesus says. Matthew 19, verses 4 through 6. And Jesus is talking, and he said unto them, have ye not read that he which made them at the beginning made them male and female? And said, for this cause shall a man leave father and mother, and shall cleave to his wife, and they two shall be one flesh. Wherefore, they are no more two, but one flesh. What therefore God hath joined together, let not man put asunder. Jesus, he confirmed what we read in Genesis chapter 2, that the two would become one, and that's what a God-ordained marriage consists of. He said, let not man put asunder what God has joined together. Putting asunder means that you're going to tear it apart or rip it apart from the way it was originally intended to be. And polygamy does that. It tears apart the marriage that God ordained and provided. A woman has the right to have 100% of her husband, just like a man has the right to have 100% of his wife. This is a union that God put together as an example. It was a prototype, if you will, of all future marriages according to his design. Now, if God wanted a quicker way to populate this new earth that he had just created, he certainly would have and could have instigated polygamy right then and there. But he didn't. Now, I read an apologetic on this one time. Actually, it was rather recently. That the reason that God didn't make many wives for Adam at that particular time, of course, this is pro-polygamy apologetic, was because Adam couldn't spare that many ribs. Well, you know, if you get into the Hebrew word of this passage, it wasn't a rib that God took. It was something from his side. And he only has the side, you know. So, and if God wanted to make many wives, he could have made arrangements to do that. The rib thing has nothing to do with God's design. God's original design also is mentioned in 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 2. We've talked about this verse a lot, and we'll probably do so again. 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 2 says, nevertheless, to avoid fornication, let every man have his own wife, and let every woman have her own husband. Again, that verifies one for one. God made one for one, and that's the way he wants it to be. One man for one woman. Now, I have heard some folks say, well, this is just indicating that a man and a woman are supposed to be married. And that's the way you have to be married before you die, or you can't go into celestial glory and all this other stuff. And so this verse is just indicating that. Well, you know what? Later on in this chapter, Paul says, it's good if you don't get married. So it can't mean that, because the context disallows that. But let me show you something here. The same wording for the man is for the woman. Let each woman have her own husband, let each man have his own wife. That's the same wording, which means that if we're going to take it like that, then a woman can have multiple husbands, because the wording is exactly the same for the man as it is for the woman. So that doesn't hold water either. And also in this verse, anything other, did you see the verse? Nevertheless, to avoid fornication, anything other than the one man, one woman marriage is fornication. That's what the Bible says. Okay, if anyone wants to begin calling in, you certainly are welcome to do so now. The phone lines are open. Our number is 801-973-8820. Okay, that's the first marriage in the Bible. Indicates very clearly that God's plan and God's design for marriage is not polygamy. We have Derek on the telephone. He's a first-time caller. Hello, Derek.
Yes,
welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you very much. First, I want to say that I'm so glad that you got yourself out of the polygamous community that you were in.
I'm very glad as well.
Okay. Well, my question is, polygamy, I don't understand. Polygamy is a felony. And I don't understand why the state of Utah is not prosecuting these people, especially the ones that rape children. Being a member, a former member of a polygamous community, what do you think the real reason is that these people are not being prosecuted?
Derek, that's a very complicated reason and a question. We go through this about every 2 or 3 weeks on the show, and it is a question that people continue to ask. There are many reasons that they don't prosecute. One is the sheer numbers of the polygamists in the Intermountain West. There are just tens of thousands of them, and it would be very difficult to round them all up and arrest them all. And then you've got the problem with all the extra wives and with all of the children. They have huge families, some of them. So there really isn't the police power, the jail power, the court power, the attorney power behind the ability to do all this. I don't think that the political climate is conducive to wanting to do this. And also, I don't think there's enough police power to do it.
Well, what about the federal government? So we should just allow these people to continue raping children?
I don't think we should
allow... molesting children?
I don't think that we should allow, and I know that there are different government agencies set up to help the abuses, and I know that that is going on, although I don't really believe that they're getting much of the abuse that's deep inside these groups, but at least they're trying to do that. And I know Harry Reid from Nevada, the senator from Nevada, also wanted to set up a federal task force, and there's pros and cons on that, you know, to get the federal government involved, but it is a federal law, so...
Do you ever think, Doris, that the reason that they do not prosecute this is because the LDS Church worries so much about its reputation in the world?
No, I think that's part of it.
And that every time they steer this pot of polygamy,
I think it
hurts the reputation of the LDS Church, and that might be the real reason?
Well, that's part of it. I don't know if that's the real reason, but that certainly is a part of it, you bet. And when the El Dorado rescue attempt was started in April, I know the LDS Church got really nervous because the FLDS was just too close to LDS. And in fact, they put up a disclaimer on the webpage, which I've read, and I'm going to take that thing apart in one of the shows next month because they've been very deceptive in the way they've put that together. But yes, they want to remove themselves and pull as far away from polygamy as they can.
Well, I think most Americans in Utahns, Doris, don't mind spending their tax dollars to put these people in jail, especially the ones who rape children.
Well,
and I appreciate talking with you.
Thank
you,
Derek.
And you have a wonderful evening.
Thank you, Derek. I appreciate your call. Good night. Okay, we have Matthew on chat on line two. Matthew?
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Well, first I wanted to say that I have to agree with Derek. I can't think of another crime, a felony, that is allowed to kind of flourish, where everyone in the whole country, certainly around here at least, knows that it's happening, and the authorities turn a blind eye to it. I mean, can you imagine if there was a town somewhere and out in the desert where people openly, I don't know, grew marijuana, and the law enforcement just kind of let it go? I think he had a good point. But what I kind of wanted to say is, I've watched your show a few times, and I think it's really important what you're doing. But I kind of think maybe something I haven't heard you mention so much is kind of the elephant in the room as far as polygamy goes. And this is my opinion, but whether it's what was the motivation behind a guy like Joseph Smith, a religious fraud like Joseph Smith, or the modern day versions, the Warren Jeff people, or polygamy in the Middle East, you know, it's these guys, let's just say it, they want sex with a lot of women, period, plain and simple. And, you know, they're no different than Hugh Hefner or Larry Flint, but at least Hugh Hefner and Larry Flint don't go around claiming it was divinely inspired.
Well, Matthew, let me interject something here. You have hit the nail on the head to a certain degree. However, I'm going to back down a little bit on the fact that it's all sex for all the men, because I know that that isn't true. For some,
there might be a few out there, but that's got to, come on, that's the overriding desire.
Well, from my viewpoint of having been born and raised in the polygamy group,
right,
I know that there are some men who are very serious about this, because they think that's the only way that they can please God and get into eternal glory. That's what they're taught from the cradle, just like I was taught that from the cradle. And they believe they have to do that. And I also know that there are some polygamous men that would get out of it as fast as they could if they thought they could get to heaven without doing it, because it's not an easy life for some of them either, if they're very serious about it. But then back to the way you said,
Do they consummate the marriages? Physically, sexually, with the women?
Oh, yeah.
Or do they ever get married in, like, name only, to fulfill a religious, in their mind, a religious...
Oh, no. The polygamy is for having children. Definitely for having children. Even in the early Mormon polygamy, it was. They tell you it wasn't. That's one of the myths.
Right.
But it was for having children. And even Jacob, in the Book of Mormon, Jacob 2:30 tells you that. That this was for having children.
Well, it just seems to me that it's a very convenient way for these guys to have sex with multiple women.
For some it is, and for some it's not.
Most men are fairly hardwired to find many different types of women attractive, and, you know, I mean, if what bothers me is the way that they twist the word of God to make something that is...
That's what bothers
very earthly.
Me. And Matthew, that's one of the things that we talk about on the show so often. That's a huge topic that we bring out every week, is they bring God into it.
Right, yeah, exactly. If they wanted to...
They make God the scoundrel here.
Hundreds of, you know, millions of guys that don't you know, might not be chaste in their personal lives, but they're not warping the minds of these young girls into believing getting away from the teachings of the Savior. I really think these guys are they make my skin crawl. You know, I said, I mean, they're no different than men like Hugh Hefner, but Hugh Hefner at least doesn't make any bones about it, and he doesn't bring God into it. You know, I mean, I do like your show. I've only seen it a handful of times, and I have polygamy in my background. In my
Most
you know,
people
I was
from
born
Utah do.
Mormon, although I realized years ago that the Mormon Church is, quite frankly, just a pyramid scheme from the ground up. But I do like your show, and I'll keep watching. And I just that was my two cents worth. I really do believe, and maybe I obviously don't know nearly as much about the subject as you, obviously, but I do think that these guys, at least a lot of them, are just living their, you know, teenage fantasies.
Well, thank you for your call.
Have a great day.
And thank you very much. Good night. Okay, we have Ken in Provo, first-time caller. Hello, Ken.
Hi, Doris.
Hi.
I think all you people are getting kind of worked up over nothing, really, here.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah?
How would you address the fact that Solomon and David had multiple wives in the Old Testament?
You know, Ken, that's part of what we're starting with this Bible study tonight. We started at the beginning in Genesis chapter 2 at the first marriage, and we're going to work our way through the flood of Noah, through Abraham and Hagar and Jacob and David and Solomon. So if you want to stick around, it's going to take a few weeks to get through all of this, but we will go through every bit of that and show you how they were living polygamy aside from God's will, in spite of God's will. And if you want to go to Deuteronomy chapter 17, verse 17, it says that the king shall not multiply wives unto himself. And both David and Solomon did. They were in direct disobedience to a command of God.
Now, didn't Solomon pray for wisdom?
He sure enough did.
And he, how can we say that he was wise?
Well, he was very wise, but he was also disobedient.
Huh.
Yeah.
Well, that's going to be a challenge for you, don't you think?
Not a challenge at all. And if you want to stick around, you'll be able to see what I'm talking about.
As far as the culture goes, I've also heard that there are a lot of liberal women out there that kind of perceive this to be the ideal situation for them.
Well, you know, whatever the personal preference is, that we're not going to hit on that. We're hitting on the polygamy groups that from the cradle hold the people captive, the saying that it's God's will. You're damned if you don't practice polygamy. You have to live it to go to heaven. You have to live it to become a god and a goddess and all of this other. That's who we're hitting. If somebody wants to marry their donkey and go live out in the desert, that's their prerogative. We're not going to hit that. Just don't say God told them to do it.
I see. Well, I just wanted to address those two parts of what I perceive is that, you know, on one half, you have the Old Testament prophets doing it, and then in a cultural way, I've also heard that it's the ideal situation and setting for many liberated women to minimize the men.
Well, there's a lot of liberated women who don't live polygamy, too. So, you know, in fact, there's more of them who don't than those who do.
I guess I'll have to tune in. There's no quick answer you're going to give me tonight.
Nope, I'm afraid not.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks for your call. Okay, we have Sasha calling from Salt Lake. Hello, Sasha. Sasha? Hello?
Hi.
Hello, Sasha. Hello, are you there?
Hello, I'm sorry.
Is this Sasha?
Hello?
Have you turned the TV down?
Hello?
Have you turned... Hello?
Hi.
Hello, Sasha. Are you there?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, then do you have a comment or a question that you'd like to talk about?
I'm so sorry.
Is your TV turned down?
Yes.
Okay. What's your question?
Okay, I would like to kind of statement... Because I personally know a polygamist escapee. She's very famous. She wrote a book. And so I view the polygamy issue not really quite as a religious, like you were just quoting from the Bible, but I view it more as kind of what the man a couple calls before was talking about. You know, it's more of, to me, an issue of women's, you know, it's demeaning, I don't know if that's the right word, women, because, you know, basically polygamy is just viewing women simply as objects, and so, you know, I was questioning you, what do you think about that, and because you lived in the polygamy.
I was born in a polygamy group. I did not practice polygamy. My mother did. We lived in a polygamous family. And from a lot of what I've seen, women are in slavery. I wouldn't call it sexual slavery as much as I would call it religious slavery. And the sex of polygamy is involved naturally. This kind of a religious group will always bring in those who can bring their perversions in with it. It attracts perversions, but there are also people that are very serious about this, who really truly believe that this is God's will for them.
Yes.
And this is the
That's
people
very evident. I mean, it's, you know, oh, I'm sorry. Exactly. It's so I just, you know, that was just basically the statement I wanted to make.
Okay.
And, well, that,
is that your question?
Yeah, that's great.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Have a good night.
Okay. Thank you, Sasha. Good night. Okay. We have Chance calling from Payson. Hello, Chance.
Hi.
Hello. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Can you hear
hello?
Me? Is your TV turned down?
It just did.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, what's your question?
It was more just a comment. I actually, my husband currently, his mother still practices polygamy.
Uh-huh.
And his father does as well. I mean, they're not together anymore, but just about the good and bad side of it, like, she is, I mean, his mom and their family, they practice it, and they're just, I mean, completely normal people. Like, you would not even guess at all that they're polygamy. I mean, like, I don't know, they're just really, really down-to-earth, cool people, and it just kind of, I get a little upset, just, you know, how people, before they even get to know polygamy, they just, like, I mean, okay, I don't agree with polygamy, I'll say that, you know, offhand, but I mean, they're just really good people, and it's not a slavery thing. It's not like, you know, they're not trapped. I mean, neither of them, like her or any of the family, are like, you know, trying to get out. And I think that's just a common misunderstanding that people have, is, you know, that it's just this horrible, terrible thing.
Well, Chad, it depends on who you are and what group you're in, and I agree with you. There are a lot of people in polygamy. You'd never know that they even live polygamy, the way they dress and act and all of that, but still.
And I mean, I understand, like, the Warren Jeff group. I mean, that's a horrible, horrible situation. And
there's other groups that are bad as well, besides just the FLDS.
Yeah.
That really oppress their women and their children.
Yeah, and I completely disagree with that. But, I mean, I wish people would just, like,
well, it goes
her case. Like, they're great, great people.
And I have no doubt about that. But it goes back to this, what we were talking about before, and that is this. Why are they practicing polygamy? Are they practicing it because they believe that God has commanded it, that it's in the Bible and it's part of His salvation plan, and that they need to live it in order to go to heaven and to become a God? If that's why they're practicing it, that's why we're here, because that is absolutely not the case.
Yeah, and I mean, mainly it was just more of a comment. Like, I've seen the goods and bad sides of both of it, because his dad was...
There are some very bad situations in polygamy. Curl your hair if I told you that.
Terrible, and the way he treated his wives, and I mean, they all ended up leaving him because of, you know, the choices he was making. He was a really bad person. And so, I mean, I just wanted to say, like, you know, I've seen the good side. Like, they can be good people, and I wish that people wouldn't, you know, down on them as a whole. Just, you know, like, they're individual people too.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you. I agree with you on that. But again, if we're going to look at God's will, we have to take in every single polygamy group and wonder why they're living polygamy.
Yeah, absolutely. But I just wish people would, you know, view them as people as well.
I agree. So, I agree. People God loved, people that Jesus Christ died on the cross for. And He made the way to heaven that way rather than through practicing polygamy.
Yes, I agree with you. And I think this is a really interesting topic, you know, to discuss. And also just about how you were saying that, and I'm sure it does happen, but in my case, not the situation. Like I said, my husband, his family, you know, is polygamy, and he has no desire whatsoever to ever, you know, go into polygamy at all. And so, I mean, I know, like, on our end, we've been together for almost 5 years now, and mm-hmm. it's not even anything. Like, he has, you know, no want or desire at all to ever go back into it. I mean, he was never really practiced it because he was young, you know.
Uh-huh. Well, let's hope he continues thinking that way.
Excuse me?
Let's hope he continues thinking that way.
Yeah, and I know he will, but, I mean, I don't know. But that was all. No.
Okay. Well, we appreciate your call.
Okay, thank you.
Uh-huh, thank you. Good
All right,
night.
Bye-bye. Mm-hmm.
Okay, it looks like we have a call that's just coming in. Neva from Tooele. Neva?
Yeah.
Hello, Neva. This is, you're on the show. This is Doris.
Well, the caller that was, I can't think of his name now. It's gone. Old age getting up to me.
Okay.
Anyway, he said that the prophets practiced polygamy, and they didn't practice polygamy. Kings practiced polygamy.
Well, now that you just made a good point there. However, God did call Abraham a prophet, and he didn't really practice polygamy either. It was. We'll get into that in a couple of weeks, but
yeah, he didn't practice polygamy
right,
really.
The prophets like Jeremiah and Ezekiel and some of those, no, they didn't practice it.
No,
but it was the kings mostly.
It was almost always kings, and I don't think there was any prophets in the Old Testament at all who ever practiced polygamy. I can't recall of any of them anyway.
Okay, well that's a good point, Neva. Thanks for calling and. Telling us of that.
Okay.
Okay. Good night.
Night.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, interesting calls that we've had tonight. We appreciate your calls. Next week we'll have to continue. I thought I was going to be able to get into the first polygamist tonight, but we didn't quite make that with our calls, but that's okay. We can do that next week with Lamech, who was the first polygamist. You might want to read Genesis chapter 4. And also, what's the polygamy connection to the flood of Noah in Genesis chapter 6? You might want to read that. And if we have time next week, we will also get into Abraham and Sarah and Hagar and who gave who to whom and why. And we can talk about that next week as well. Did you know that any belief system that exalts man is the wrong belief system? Any belief system that exalts man. God is the center of the universe, not man. Without God, you can do nothing. Without God, we are nothing. Without God, we would be nothing. Without God and His salvation plan, He made a way for sinners, we absolutely would all be going on the same road, right straight to hell. However, God has already prepared the way to heaven. Why are you trying to do something He's already done? He has made the way. You don't need to make another way to heaven. And the way to heaven is not polygamy, and it is not the United Order. When folks decide that they're going to get to heaven their way, they're spurning God's grace, they're spurning what Jesus did on the cross, and they're saying that His works are not as good as yours, and God will not let you in to the gates of heaven when you do that. So we urge you to take the gift of eternal life, and it is a gift, and we thank you for being here tonight. We'll be here next week and hope you're here with us too. Thanks for being here. Good night, and God bless.
This has been the audio podcast edition of Polygamy, What Love Is This? This program is a production of A Shield and Refuge Ministry and Main Street Church of Brigham City. You can view current and past video episodes as well as download audio episodes of this program at whatloveisthis.tv. If you or someone you know is in need of assistance in leaving a polygamous situation, please contact us. We are here to help. All of our contact information can be found at shieldandrefuge.org or call us at 877-425-9993. If you have any questions or comments about this or any of our other programs, we'd love to hear from you. Write us at email at whatloveisthis.tv. Thanks for listening, and we hope you'll join us again.